Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bengal Tiger Podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me once again is Shay Dixon. Shay, how are you doing today? It's kind of a little cloudy outside, raining all day.
A little overcast, rained overnight. You pull a late one. You were watching LSU, Georgia women's basketball, but I see you wearing the Spurs hat. Is this a victory day for you? This was the Wembanyama Chet game?
Yes, yes, yes. Wembanyama secured his rookie of the year and put anything else of Chet being better to bed. So, yes, I'm feeling good.
Are we high on Wimby's future here? I've watched a couple games. It's awkward to watch someone that big and lanky do it, but he's heating up.
Yeah, that's my guy. That's my team, obviously, for those who don't know, from San Antonio. So we've been waiting for this for about 5 years.
And you're still the worst team in the West, right?
Yes.
But you've been waiting for this moment.
We're getting there.
This is the turning point.
This is it.
I guess if you finish with a bad row, the Pistons are pretty bad, but you'll still get a lottery pick that's very high.
Yeah, another one. So we'll see. We'll keep stacking them up. But check in with me in about a month. I think we'll see if Wimby keeps working, putting up these crazy, crazy games. But yeah, so I feel great.
Your goal is the Pels type turnaround. You need the Pels level where you have a few drafts, you hit on him, you get a big player like B.I. to come in even when AD leaves, and now you're cruising. Yeah. You need to find you a 3-and-D like Herb Jones, Matty B.
Exactly. Herb Jones is Shay's guy. So
don't be mad about where he went to college, people. He's still a good player.
Exactly. All right. We have the defensive preview for spring football for LSU today. If you missed the offensive one, go check that out. That one did really well, and everybody seems to be enjoying that. So, yeah, we did position by position breakdown of the offense, went through, the offensive coordinator change as well. Here, we'll be doing the same thing. Position by position, defensive coordinator talk, kind of just run through everything we're looking forward to seeing in the spring, which starts up next week. We're recording this on Friday, and I think it starts up, what was it, Tuesday, somewhere in that range. So
yeah, Tuesday.
So we'll be on top of that. So stay tuned to the Bengal Tiger On 3 for the latest and all the information you need throughout the spring. Shay, where do we want to start when reviewing and previewing defense?
Let's go coaches first. Not often does a team head coach fire everyone that's on one side of the ball following a 10-win season. That's what happened at LSU. They finished with the number one offense, but they finished with well outside the top 100 of really any important defensive metric or stat category on defensively. So with that said, we knew Matty B after the season, or we figured there was going to be a couple changes. Brian Kelly comes out in one day and announces that everyone's been fired. So they go out and put together a staff that I think now that everyone steps back, and this was the immediate reaction as well, but even as the dust has settled and time's gone on now, and we've had a month to mull it over and look at what other hires have been made out there that you're throwing like an A+ on. I don't know anyone complaining about any of these hires. And you start with Blake Baker, a guy who now comes back to Louisiana, Houston native, Tulane grad, spent a long time at La Tech. He was there when Joe Sloan was. Now they're both coordinators for LSU, but he was the linebackers coach at LSU for a year. Matty B, you were here during that time. He really turned Damone Clark around, and not that Damone wasn't a good player before then, but he made a big jump and ends up getting drafted. He's playing on Sundays now. And all eyes, obviously, and we'll talk about Harold Perkins here in a bit, but are on how he uses these linebackers. Defensively, though, Blake Baker, for me, young guy, is a well-respected coordinator, knows the linebacker and safety positions. He coaches very well. Coached safeties at Missouri. He's coached linebackers plenty. He'll do that here. I remember the first practice he came to, he wore cleats. He then wore cleats to most practices, like very hands-on. And Brian Kelly said he needed someone who would re-energize this defense and that would instill some confidence in them, put them in the right spots. I just don't see anything with Blake Baker right now that makes me feel like he's not that guy. Like, I think that the immediate results following the hire of Blake Baker, I think, are already probably starting to show.
Yeah, this was the one for me that when we looked at like potential candidates, Blake Baker was always the one that I thought was kind of the obvious choice in a sense. Obviously, they were, you know, could have gone for bigger names, right? Or maybe your more established guys. Blake Baker's still young. But in terms of, like you said, re-energizing the defense and obviously being hands-on with the line at the linebacker position in particular, I think this is just a home run hire. And I've harped on it before. We've talked about it at length before, the job that he did at Missouri, you know, turning guys. I mean, Tyron Hopper over there, Ennis Rakestraw, Chris Abrams Drain. I mean, these are guys that are now like NFL prospects as, you know, former three-star guys pretty much. I know defensive line, they had some guys too. So Blake Baker, what he was able to build at Missouri in 2 years in terms of an efficient defense, an aggressive defense, and one that seemingly had players in position to make plays every time you watched them. Now, they weren't perfect, right? I think they were still in the like 30 to 40 range in most defensive metrics. But hell, for Missouri, I mean, that's a really good year. And that helped them obviously have the year that they had this past year. So, yeah, I love the hire. I think him, and then, you know, we get to the rest of the hires here, which we've talked about. But I mean, I just think this is a really, really, this is a group that I think you move forward to both in recruiting and on the field. And you're like, all right, I don't know where this could go wrong. Like, I just think this is pretty airtight to me.
Philosophy wise, in a simple sentence or two, how much different is it than what LSU did? And maybe just personnel. Is this four down linemen at all time? Is this a stand up edge rusher, a jack, as they would call it? Is this three linebackers kind of with a weak side? What's the feel for how they transitioned that group a year ago, which was three down linemen, a stand up lineman who is the jack, you know, the outside linebacker, a couple middle backers, and then they'd usually play five DBs. Is that kind of the feel of this Blake Baker defense?
Yeah, it's still going to be a 4-2-5 or a 3-3-5, whatever you want to call it. I think the Braden Swensons and the, you know, that outside linebacker position, I think it'll be more about pass rushing than even it was last year. I don't think it'll be much about coverage at all. But yeah, basically it's a 4-2-5. That's what he ran in Missouri. That's what he's pretty much ran as the defenses he's been in. So I don't think it'll look much different, but I think it'll be a lot more aggressive in terms of blitzing, and which we'll talk about the linebackers, but I think those linebackers will be a lot more aggressive in both filling the gaps and blitzing. That's going to be the main difference to me. Matt House's defense were kind of indecisive at times. And I think that was one of the things I talked about last year, was like, not only in how he used Harold Perkins, but, you know, how they used the safeties, how they used the corners. You know, they were never really asserting themselves defensively. I think Blake Baker's defenses do a really good job of that. And I think that's what puts up the numbers that they put up last year in Missouri. That's why.
Yeah, the past 2 years, the 2 years he was the DC at Missouri, they were top 40 both years, whether you're looking at total defense, scoring defense, whatever it is. LSU obviously quite far from that. Had they had a top 40 defense last year, they're playing in the playoffs for an SEC championship and a chance at a national championship. And they don't even get into a New Year's Six Bowl. So the disparity between offense and defense obviously led Kelly to making all these changes. I would say the one that maybe made the most waves, Maddie B, is the secondary coach, Corey Raymond. He went to LSU. His first job was at LSU, and he was the longest tenured coach through the Orgeron era, 10 years on staff consecutively. Goes and spends a couple of seasons with Florida. Didn't work out with Billy Napier, and boy, there was every DB name out there, coach, tossed around that's got SEC experience. Like, it was one of those things where it was like half the fan base wanted Corey Raymond, half the fan base wanted them to do a new direction. But when it was Corey Raymond and he was named, it seemed like everybody got on board and said, all right, I'm good with this. Let's move forward. In recruiting, Matty B, we're already seeing it. I mean, they've got the number 1, 2, 4, 6, 7 corners in the country all already visiting or about to visit in March. A top 5 corners already committed now in Jabari Antoine. Like, Robert Steeples, the prior corners coach, was dealt a tough hand. I mean, he came in here as a longtime high school coach. He'd spent 1 year as an assistant, really, at the NFL level off the field, and then gets the LSU cornerbacks job at a time when they did not have much talent at corner. And he went through a couple of years where there were bumpy roads, and it's understandable. And now you go right back for Kelly to the guy that you let go. I mean, he let Raymond go to hire Steeples. Now they move on from Steeples and they bring Raymond back. Again, Blake Baker is another who was on that prior staff and is now back at LSU. For me, and look, people will say, oh, well, at the end, Corey did, you know, he left the DB room bare. Okay, well, they didn't have many scholarship players and things were unraveling. They had a lame duck head coach that was fired midway through the season but got to keep coaching in Orgeron. So, yes, there were guys leaving. I mean, we saw Dwight McLuthern, one of the guys who left and started at Arkansas for multiple years, tweeted out when Corey got hired, should have never let him go. And there was a lot of thought from former players about that. We won't get into the long term of like, will this work? But I think for me, Matty B, there wasn't a bigger splash you could have made than getting Corey Raymond back. I think what that does, just name brand, knowing the kind of guys he goes after, knowing the success they've had, you are so far from that DBU moniker the past 2 years that this is a way to get back in that direction, is hiring one of the guys who got you there.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about it, but I think the talent acquisition aspect of it is the most important to me. And we talked about that when he was hired. Like that's the thing with Corey Raymond that you know you're going to get. And I mean, the track record speaks for itself. Obviously the other defensive coaches, Bo Davis on the defensive line, Kevin Peoples off the edge, Jake Olson safeties. Any thoughts there?
Bo Davis was that name of a former LSU player who went on to be a really great coach for Bama, obviously, and then at Texas as the D-line coach. And every offseason there would be rumblings. I mean, Bo Davis might come back. Bo Davis might come back. And it never came to fruition. And finally, here we are. And let's see if it puts an end to the bleeding, because that, again, I think you talk home run hires. When you're LSU and you've got an LSU grad like Bo Davis who's done what he's done at multiple top-tier universities, and now he can come to LSU and recruit D linemen and hopefully put a stop to this annual turnover of, what, 7 D line coaches in 7 years, something like that, 8 D line coaches in 8 years. You can't sustain not just development, but recruiting like that. And we've seen the D line take hits. So that was a massive hire for me. Jake Olson being the youngest guy on staff, on field staff, I think is the one that we don't know a ton about yet. He's had coaching stops around Louisiana, but he got brought to Missouri with Blake Baker, and that's kind of his right-hand man, his choice for this, the guy who will coach up the safeties. But I look at a guy like Kevin Peoples and Matty B. He's been in the business coaching for nearly 30 years. Everybody up at Missouri said this guy's an ace recruiter and coach. A bunch of his former players, I mean, he coached at Tulane for a while. A lot of them have chimed in about how good of a coach he is. So I feel like he's one that we didn't all know. He wasn't like a household name to LSU fans, but it could be one that's surprising who comes in and it's like, man, that was a really solid hire by Blake Baker, because clearly Baker bringing Peoples and Olson from Missouri has some confidence in these two guys.
Yeah. We'll kind of talk about how, you know, the coaching and stuff that we'll look forward to in the spring. Well, after seeing a couple practices, we'll be able to talk about how hands-on they are and how they coach and whatnot. We already know a little bit about Blake Baker, like Shea said, and Corey Raymond, but the rest we'll get to see a little bit more in action as the spring unfolds. Let's go position by position here. We can start on the defensive line. I think that's the easiest. We'll start on the interior, I guess. We'll start.
There's not many people there, so it's an easy place to start.
Exactly.
Matty B, what did they do? They returned 2 interior scholarship players, Jacobian Guillory and Jalen Lee.
Yep. Oh, Kimo Macagnole now as well.
That's right. They have moved an offensive lineman in Kimo Macagnole from O-line to D-line, and we'll see his debut there in camp. He's been on the team for a few years now as a backup offensive lineman. But Mason Smith is gone. Makai Wingo is gone. They had a slew of backups transfer out. Jordan Jefferson, obviously, is gone, who they had gotten from West Virginia. So now you're looking at a situation where, as I mentioned, you only bring back 2 guys, and both of them are kind of nose tackles, right? I mean, in Jalen Lee and Jacobian Guillory, they signed a JUCO addition in Sean Washington. They signed a couple of high school guys, including a five-star in Dom McKinley, Ahmad Bro, Demirian Johnson. But Ahmad Bro will be the only guy who's there this spring, if we're kind of making this a spring preview of what the D-line is. On the interior, you're not going to have Dom McKinley or Demirian Johnson until the summer months. So moving Chemo over made sense. It gives you some bodies there. They'll have some walk-ons. But I would have to think that all eyes are on Jacobian Guillory, Jalen Lee, and Sean Washington, and kind of what they look like on the interior.
It's got to be Sean Washington. Is the, like, if we're picking a player to watch this spring, for me, it's like Sean Washington's one of the most important pieces, really, of this entire offseason. Is he ready to play significant snaps week one for this team? When the season starts, like that's a big question I have. And how much does he need to be a backup guy, or can he step in and be a starter? And that's not saying he has to play 80 or 70% of snaps if he does start, but like, can he be a reliable contributor out of junior college?
Yes. So he was at Georgia as a freshman, won a national championship on that team, but he was a reserve. Goes JUCO. They went to a JUCO national championship, and he played a ton at EMCC. But you're right, now it's stepping up back to the SEC and expected, unlike his freshman year at Georgia, to actually be a big contributor and potential starter for him. I almost get the feeling, and this is twofold, again, and we named those kind of interior defensive linemen they have already. It's not a deep group. It's a young group, given half of them are newcomers. And now you've got Chemo switching over from offensive line to defensive line. I guess you've got a few questions here, and I think D-line is one of the biggest question marks. One, are you moving anybody else on this D-line inside? And I think you've really only got, like, you go to D-end and say, do you move Parrish Shand inside? But, you know, you're not moving, I don't think, Womack inside, no. I don't think you're moving Relaford inside. I think he's more of your prototypical defensive end. And that would leave you with the Savion Jones and Shand. This is my opinion. People were down on Savion Jones last year. He had put on some weight to be able to stop the run a bit more, and he wasn't as productive as he had been the year prior when he was a backup. And really, Parrish Shand at times outplayed Savion Jones. If you're putting any more weight on Savion Jones, that's only holding him back even more, in my opinion. So this is a sticky spot for me with that. Two is, you've got to find spring portal guys. That just seems like a must, that in the spring portal, you're signing at least one, if not two, defensive tackles that can come in and give you reps or be a starter. And then three, does a freshman emerge, like, or a JUCO guy like Sean Washington? They have to have one of them, whether it's Dom McKinley or whether it's Sean Washington. One of those guys is going to have to be a part of this kind of rotation of the interior defensive line. Right now, it's kind of fascinating because we know that maybe another piece or two are going to be added, but even then, there's still so many unknowns, at least for me, Matty B. I mean, Guillory, yes, is a veteran, but everybody else is a bit of an unknown to me.
Yeah, I think, I mean, projecting forward, and I guess in the spring, you look at Dom McKinley and you're like, okay, he should be able to come in and give us some snaps, like week one, whenever the season starts. But as far as the spring goes, I think, you know, Guillory, Lee, and Washington are the three that you're like, all right, we need to have those three ready to play. Like right now, we need to have them ready, getting all the reps to where over the summer, all right, we work on conditioning, we get them ready, and then fall ball, those three are ready to go, regardless of whether McKinley can play or not, like week one. Because McKinley, you know, has a lot of tools and he's going to have to be coached up and stuff. Like, he's not a perfect, you know, drop in and play guy. I think Washington, Guillory, and Lee are the three that I'm looking forward to seeing. And, I mean, Guillory and Lee probably are what they are at this point, but give them some reps and see if they can improve anymore. And you got a new coach in there. So, this obviously is not going to be Mekhi Wingo and Jordan Jefferson or even Mason Smith last year. Like, I just think, you know, the quality is not as where it was last year. That's not breaking news, but Guillory, Lee, and Washington have at least the experience. And I think they have the bodies to where they can hold up on the inside. So it's not a great position to be in, but we knew that coming in, they're going to have to go get a portal guy or move somebody inside. But I mean, they at least have some bodies that Bo Davis can work with.
So if they got two quality portal defensive tackles, I would feel completely different about this interior group. Yeah. Even one makes me feel a good bit better about it. But if they had two guys out there, even that were Jordan Jefferson types, that were playing at a West Virginia, that were starters, that were solid players, that might have been second team all ACC, something like that. If you had two of those types of guys, I would feel better about it.
Yeah. Jordan Jefferson would be a savior on this defense right now. Let's move to the edge a little bit.
Well, you feel way better about these spots, the defensive end and edge jack linebacker spots.
Yes. I mean, a lot of returners, honestly, here. Like you mentioned Savion Jones and then Paris Shand and Deshaun Womack. Gabe Relaford is the new addition there. I think Womack is the one from that defensive end group that you're like, all right, here we go. Sophomore year, made some plays as a freshman. I contended last year for Womack. It was early on. It was – he had the – what was it? 5 pressures and like 10 snaps or something like that. You're like, okay, this is great. And then he kind of tailed off. If you go look at his numbers at the back half of the season, it was – he played some snaps and he didn't get any pressures, didn't really get any notable statistics there. And so it's like, all right, can Deshaun Womack sustain that? How can he figure it out? He's the one for me. I'm looking at defensive end, and if you include the other edge spot, which is Braden Swinson, Jackson Howard, Dylan Carpenter, and so on, he's still – Womack is the one for me that I'm like, all right, you got to figure him out this year.
And I don't know what it is. Is it moving him back to a stand-up edge kind of rusher? Is he a third down kind of pass specialist? He came in to the bowl game doing a bit of that when he was playing a little bit more. I don't know the answer because they've got talent, as you noted, at both those spots. Like Braden Swinson outplayed the starter at the, at Jack linebacker last year. He just did. He steps in and out a role where you feel like he's starting and his backup is Jackson Howard, who they've talked really highly of. And they didn't go that more than too deep into that Jack position last year. It was typically just OV and Braden. And that was like kind of it each game. So even though they have some guys behind him, I would think that, all right, if you see that kind of rotation and maybe toss in Womack standing up every now and then, it works. And then I feel really good about Jones and Shand and toss in Relaford. If you think Relaford's going to give you any early snaps like McKinley can. So the end position, the DN position, and then the jack or any, however you want to call it, stand-up linebacker, I think that's those two spots I feel really good about. It's just the interior of the line that leaves me with question marks.
Yeah. As from a pass rushing perspective, I still think they're going to use like the linebackers more, and this is what the spring is going to show us. But in general, it's always been if you can get home with 4, then you're in a good position. Last year, they weren't really able to get home with 4, and that was a major problem. They had a lot of major problems, right? I didn't think Savion Jones, like we mentioned, took a step back as a pass rusher. Paris Shand was kind of like a tweener. Braden Swinson was good. I think the back half of the year, he was much better than the first half of the year, and he also got to play more in the second half of the year. But Swinson was better as the year went on. So I think Swinson is the one for me. If we look at, honestly, Swinson might be the best edge player on this team. And I know that's they have Savion Jones and Deshaun Womack and Paris Shand, but like, Swinson was really good last year, and if he can keep up that trajectory, I think Swinson's the one that, like, we're talking about edge pressure consistently. Womack and Swinson are the two that can give that to you on a consistent basis. So I think that's huge. And I don't want to also forget about Jackson Howard, who was highly rated to come out of high school. We heard good things about him. Him this spring is going to be big for him to assert himself in the two deep.
If we're picking out breakout players, Swinson would be up there for me. I just thought he had a really good year last year and could do that again. And I like what I've seen from Shand. I hope Savion Jones makes a leap too, because he was kind of my breakout guy last year. It just didn't happen. So maybe this year is kind of his year to shine through after he's had a year of adjusting to being at that size, playing the DN spot, playing more than just a situational pass rusher role, which Deshaun Womack was going through. And he said, look, I've now had to learn going into year two of taking on runs, being really strong in run support and being more than just a third and long type of player. So excited about the DNs, excited about the jacks or edges. Just don't know yet about the interior, but we'll get to start to see a few of them out there, including, as you noted, Sean Washington, who will be an important JUCO piece for him. And We'll see what happens after the spring portal and then when Dom McKinley and the rest of the D linemen get here this summer. But let's stick in the front seven here and Blake Baker's position. And it's maybe been the most talked about position, despite the reality, Matty B, that they've had such a rough go at DB the past, well, certainly this past year. That became a main talking point. The fact that what we just noted about the interior defensive linemen, the lack of not getting Mason and Mekhi back, having Jordan Jefferson obviously out of eligibility, left them in this spot, and now they're having to chase portal guys. But I feel like even with both those things, people have talked more about linebacker, which is the spot they returned everybody at, and what the usage is for Harold Perkins. Brian Kelly's now come out and talked about it a couple of times and said Harold Perkins will be used as a linebacker, will not be used in that primary edge rush role. So more like what he did last year than what he did the year prior. But you've said it many, many times. Put on the Missouri film, Blake Baker's linebackers are really aggressive and they get after the passer plenty. So is this the right fit for both LSU and Perkins's future on Sundays? Because I think that's obviously plays into this.
Yeah, it plays into it. I think the concerns about his size are valid to a point. Like, he's 6'1", 220, listed at that. Let's say he plays next year as 6'1", 225, or if he can even get to 230. I mean, that's very much on par with the players that are in the NFL Combine right now at linebacker. 6'1", 230 would not be really abnormal at all. We know how fast he is, how explosive he is. My concern would be, don't do to Harold Perkins what you did to Savion Jones just to try to make him hold up better against the run. Like, don't take away what he's great at just to try to make him perfect, or try to perfect him. Like, don't put on 15, 20 pounds this offseason. I don't think he needs to bulk up that much. I understand he's not great against the run, but in what I saw from Tyron Hopper last year at Missouri, I think Blake Baker can work around that. And I think at the end of the day, your defense, your interior defensive linemen aren't great. Your linebackers aren't, like, I think Greg Penn's probably the best run stopper of the group. Whit Weeks and Harold Perkins aren't great. Don't go out of your way to try to, like, slow down Harold Perkins just to put on 20 pounds here. I think you let him be who he is. I think you, if you need to rotate him, Whit Weeks and Greg Penn a lot, then do it. Like, you think you have good depth there between those three, and just let Harold Perkins be Harold Perkins. You got to be aggressive with him. I think he already has a foundation for pass coverage now.
Yeah.
Like, last year didn't work out great, right? Because he was in pass coverage so much. But hey, now he has some experience in pass coverage, which is going to be very, very valuable, not only for this year, but for the NFL. So I think Harold Perkins is in a good spot to learn from a great linebackers coach, and to kind of, you're going to have to learn one way or the other. It's going to be an adjustment for Harold Perkins. I think this is just the better of the two options. And now he's in a position to where you're going to have to watch a ton of film. You're going to have to study the playbooks. You're going to have to do a lot of things when it comes to filling run gaps and playing the pass. And then obviously blitzing from a different spot, you're going to have to figure that out as well. So Harold Perkins, I think moving him inside is the right choice. If y'all haven't, if y'all haven't watched our previous podcast, like Mailbags, we've talked about it extensively, but Harold Perkins at the inside makes the most sense, and I'm excited to see what he looks like this spring.
Yeah, and even Brian Kelly said that it's going to be a mix between coaches really drawing it up for him and teaching him and putting him in the right spot, and then Harold really soaking it in and working hard this offseason to do the things you just noted, take on all those responsibilities of what it is to be a linebacker. I do think this is the right choice. And he was good in coverage for a linebacker when he had to drop into different spots last year. He had a massive pick against Missouri in a game that came down to the very end against Blake Baker's team. So we know he can do a little bit of everything. People just want to see him getting after the pass, the ball carrier, whether it's on blitzes or quarterback or spying or whatever it might be. I think that we now see the best blend we've seen so far. Year one was just go get the quarterback. Don't worry about anything else. Year two, obviously, you've got this learning curve. You're in a different position. You're being used differently. Now I think year three with Blake Baker, having an offseason to work with him, I think we'll really see Harold kind of shine. And there were games last year where you forgot Harold was on the field. That's not a good thing for LSU's defense. Like, he needs to be a disruptor. And I think kind of we'll find, they'll, Blake Baker will find that balance. Greg Penn, personal favorite of mine, returns as a starter. Perkins is a starter. Whit Weeks got starts last year, so I guess he returns as a starter. His brother West Weeks plays plenty. You've got Braithwaite in year two, and then they signed a bunch of linebackers. Tylan Singleton, Devon Keys, Adkins, Cobbins is kind of a linebacker edge. If anything on defense, this is the room you feel best about, probably, Matty B.
Yeah, Whit Weeks is. I think Greg Penn. We know what Greg Penn is, and I think he's a good player. And I'm not saying he can't improve. I think he will improve. You've talked a lot about him taking that Damone Clark step forward. I think now that he has Blake Baker, he very well could take that step forward. I think he is necessary. Like, I think he's starting no matter what. Just because I don't see them starting Weeks and Perkins. And I know this is projecting, but like in the spring, I think we see a lot of Greg Penn, and then they work around Perkins and Weeks with their skill sets, with their ability to get sideline to sideline. So yeah, I think Penn's going to be a massive piece of this. And Whit Weeks, as much as we love him, I think Brian Kelly kind of told us last year, directly and indirectly, he wasn't really ready for the first 8-9 games of the year.
Yeah. And Weeks said that. Weeks said it at the bowl game. Said he was like, man, I would get out there this season and just look at Greg Penn and be like, what do I do again? And so in a much more country George accent. But Weeks' year, I mean, people forget, Weeks is just coming off his freshman season. So even he has said, I need this offseason to really dive into the playbook, feel good about myself, where I'm at. And I think he's in a good rotation there at linebacker with Perkins and Penn.
Yeah, so this is the one. Weeks and Perkins have to take that step forward this offseason. There can't be confusion. They have to, really work at it to get on the same page and to be able to take that step forward. Because if these linebackers don't work out, like, I think we can agree, Weeks and Perkins are two of the most talented players on this defense by far.
Yes.
And so those two have to reach their potential this year if LSU's defense is going to be, as you know, even like we said, just a top 40 defense in the country. Those two have
to. You'll take that.
Yeah, if those two reach their potential, you could be even better than that. Like, that's where that's a lot of pressure on them. And yeah, that's how I look at it this offseason and this spring especially, is are Perkins and Weeks developing? And not just from like a physical standpoint, because we know how good or how talented they are, but mentally, that's all this offseason is going to be about, is preparing yourself mentally. And that's where I think Blake Baker will play a big role in that. So I feel good about the linebacker spot, obviously, but it is the one to me that has the most like boom or bust potential still in my head. And I know we're about to talk about the defensive.
I'm on boom. I don't know. I disagree. I think that linebacker is the one that has like the highest floor, lowest ceiling. Like, I just feel like that's the surest thing.
Well, what if the Harold Perkins doesn't figure it out at inside linebacker?
I don't think that's an option. I think Harold Perkins is figuring out no matter what, or they're gonna figure it out and put Harold somewhere that he works.
Yeah, it's that. That's the thing. That's the only thing holding me up is that. And I mean, again, Weeks was good in flashes. Like, he still has to prove it to me to a degree. And can Greg Penn take a step forward? I think, and like,
Greg Penn's been a 100 tackle a year type guy for 2 years. I mean, he knows how to play the game.
Yeah, he can play the game, but he's not. I mean, at this point, he's not like a draft pick guy. So he's gonna have to take a step forward too. So it's like defensive line, I feel like, which mostly for worse, but like, we know the limitations potentially of the defensive line. We know how good it is or how bad it is at most spots. Linebacker to me is like that. This is what holds this is kind of where Blake Baker has to make his money. This is what's going to determine if you're a top 40 defense, top 30 defense or not. Like, that's a big, big task for him this offseason.
If you're playing two backers, usually in West Weeks as your fourth guy in the rotation, I feel great about it. Like,
yeah,
that's a very
talent wise. I feel great. Talent-wise, I feel great. So, West Weeks, Christian Brathwaite, Tylan Singleton, Devon.
Yeah, then you got a bunch of freshmen.
Yeah.
Devon Keys and Xavier Adkins. So, they're deep.
Yeah, I feel a lot better about the numbers this year than I have in the past 2 years. That's for sure.
Corners.
Whew.
You want to just start predicting them?
There's a thread. There's a thread on our board that's trying to predict the starting secondary for the spring game. And I was like, guys, y'all might as well buy lottery tickets. good luck with that.
Okay, here's what we do know. Zy Alexander transferred in from Southeastern. He's won a starting job for him. Really made the case to be the most reliable corner they had a year ago, and he gets hurt. God, in a meaningless spot right before halftime of that Army game. That's a blowout and is done for the year. He will not be in spring camp. But the good news now, and there was a fear among after the injury that, hey, this could bleed into next fall camp and into the season where he wouldn't even be ready for day one. We'll see if we hold Brian Kelly at his word here. Brian Kelly said he should be cleared for summer workouts, which would mean running again, lifting, and that puts you right on track for fall camp. So we'll put him to the side for a second, but he's someone who could start. He just won't be here in the spring, and we are doing a little spring preview pod here. So I'll give you your corners. Your corners are Jair Brown, who they took as an Ohio State transfer, J.K. Johnson, who they also took as an Ohio State transfer a year ago. But remember, Matty B, J.K. Johnson, he was battling for a spot either starting or in the two deep. He gets hurt in fall camp and is out all year. He's now ready for spring ball, though, so he's back in the mix. So you've got two former Ohio State players. Now you're getting into the group of guys who moved positions last year and earned starts at corner as true freshmen. Javian Toviano and Ashton Stamps. Jeremiah Hughes is back. He was a true freshman a year ago, but he played behind those guys. And then you bring in PJ Woodland, Bernard Causey. You've got Kyprian as a guy they've moved around on both sides of the ball. The same might happen with Michael Turner coming out of Curtis, who played receiver, could play some corner. But let's talk about the guys, and really let's put Nickel in here. I think we kind of you should in a way because Sage Ryan, I presume, will be the starting nickel. He had to play a bunch of corner last year.
Yeah.
Some think he's still best suited at safety. I can hear that argument. Joel Rogers coming in from West Feliciana will play nickel. Juwan Johnson will play nickel. So you've got some young guys at nickel. Ryan Robinson is still on the squad here. We'll see if they add anything else in the spring portal window, but that's after spring ball. So with just those names out there, what do you think? What are you looking at here? Let's start with the corners first before the nickels, but what are you looking out to get out of spring ball? Because for me, it's the first time getting to really see what we hope is extended action from these two Ohio State transfers. And I feel like you're in a spot where one of them has to do something for you. And by that same token, Toviano and Stamps coming off their freshman seasons, having moved from safety to corner, did they stay there? Do they move around? And like I said, by that same token, I feel like one of them has to do something. So for me, out of your two Ohio State guys and then out of your two Stamps and Toviano true freshman groups, I need to see at least one of each of them emerge.
I agree. I think that's the game right now is can Jair Brown or J.K. Johnson like potentially start for this team? I think J.K. Johnson is the better player, but J.K. Johnson's also been injury prone in his career. He missed all of last season with an injury. So not only am I worried about him, you know, staying healthy, but coming back off of a serious leg injury is never fun either. We know how fast he was out of high school and the talent that he was there. Jair Brown, to me, is going to have to prove it.
I'm higher on Jair Brown than you are.
Yeah. I'm not high on Jair Brown at all. I would take Ashton Stamps over him probably at this moment. But then the hard part with predicting the secondary is like, yeah, where does Stamps and Toviano end up? Are they going to play corner their whole career? Like, I think Toviano could move to nickel. You know, we've talked about that as well, or safety even. So that's where it's not as much as predicting the two deep. Cause like if everybody was a corner nickel and safe, like if we knew where everybody was, it wouldn't be as hard, but like, again, Toviano could play any of the five positions in the secondary and I'm fine with it.
You've got, you can kind of scrap the whole, we used in the steeples kind of two seasons. We talked about them like field boundary corners.
Yeah.
Corey is just, you're going to man up. You're going to be on the, you're not going to see any of this 15 yards off the line of scrimmage stuff. You will be manned up. He likes guys who can play press. He likes guys who can turn and run that are long. He'll recruit that. They don't have all of that in the room right now. I think young guys like PJ Woodland sort of fit that bill, but I am with you. It's intriguing because a Sage Ryan would not be your typical at all Corey Raymond corner. He is a safety. out of necessity, they had to move him around. I put him back in our depth chart at nickel. I think that's a more comfortable role for me for Sage Ryan. Your thoughts on the nickel spot? Because you mentioned Toviano could play nickel. Like, they've got a lot of guys on this team who have that bit of versatility to them.
Yeah, and I mean, we're pretty relatively high on Joel Rogers and Juwan Johnson. But yeah, I think it's Sage Ryan and Javion Toviano. I always, going into last year, I thought Toviano was best at nickel, just from the spring and summer. I assume Sage Ryan would start there. I mean, at this point, Sage Ryan, we know what he is, fourth year. Like, we've seen him play corner, safety, nickel now. He should be able to put it together and have a solid year. And so there's nothing like this spring that Sage Ryan's going to show us that's going to, you know, wildly change our opinion on him. Toviano is the one that I think at the nickel spot, we'll see how much. I think they still continue to move him around and kind of, especially with the new coaching staff, right? Baker's going to want to see him at different positions. Raymond's going to want to see him at different positions to figure out what they have there. So Toviano moving around, especially at nickel, I think is going to be something to watch for this spring.
Yeah, I feel better about the corners now than I did a year ago. I'll tell you why. A year ago, it was they took four transfers, and that was like the plan. Like, those four guys are going to carry us. I never bought into the Deuce Chestnut hype, and there was certainly some over the summer from spots where people were like, man, I heard Deuce Chestnut's tearing it up. I was like, okay, well, let me go back into fall camp, watch again. We saw it in just practices. He's not a big guy. He doesn't fit the mold of what an outside corner at LSU is. He just doesn't. And he went back to Syracuse. We never saw Denver get anything but third string reps. So, like, in practice, it was like, this guy's not going to play. And he starts a couple of games, he gets benched, he gets moved off the team. The record remains the same there. It's the same song and dance he did at A&M. You knew what you were getting yourself into. It didn't work. It never pays off. And it didn't. J.K. Johnson, who you noted, comes out of high school as a top 50 prospect, went to Ohio State, got hurt, and then comes to LSU and gets hurt in fall camp. So you lose him before you start. Zaire, your FCS player, ends up being your most reliable one, starts, and then gets injured halfway through the year. So it sort of just went to shambles for him. Yeah. And then they had to rely on, oh, let's move Sage Ryan, let's move Toviano, let's move Stamps, let's move all these guys down. They'll have to play from safety to corner. Now I feel like, okay, if you can tell me Zaire is going to be back for the season, I know what he is. I know he can play corner. I know you can put him out there. That gives you JK, both Ohio State guys, and then those two true freshmen who played last year. Like, if you want to keep Toviano and Stamps at corner, they've played there. Is it their best spot? I think that you can make the argument for Toviano, it might not be. I do think Stamps is a good corner and could probably stay there. I think Toviano may better fit at nickel or safety, but I don't know. I just go into this thinking something felt off about the relying on those four transfers that we had never seen and knew nothing about, other than the best one had off the field issues that is the reason he was there. Yeah. And even in the summer when Brian Kelly was asked at media days, hey, do you think your corners are going to be any better this year? And he says, I have no idea. He said, I won't know until we see them. And that was the truth. I don't feel that way this year. I've got a kind of a grip of what a handful of these guys can do. Now let me see what the Ohio State kids look like, you know, now that they're here and now that they're healthy.
I can agree to an extent. I can agree that there's less uncertainty this year. I think we know more about kind of what the room is than last year. Last year was blind faith. 2 years ago, it was blind faith that Mekhi Gardner and Jerick Bernard-Converse would work out. Last year was blind faith as well, and that's what Brian Kelly talked about in the sense that we don't know what we have. This year, there's less blind faith because, you know, some of these guys have been in the system. And
yeah, we've seen them play.
Yeah, and you've recruited, you know, the guys like Jeremiah Hughes and Ashton Stamps and whatnot. I still just – there's a lot of work to do, I just think, with this cornerback group. I don't feel good. I don't feel good about the cornerback room right now still.
Look, if we're mixing in the nickel here, I mean, you've got – we mentioned Juwan Johnson, Wallace Foster, but they've signed Woodland. You can move Turner over. They've got Causey coming in. You mentioned Hughes coming back with Stamps and Toviano. You'll have Zai back, and then you've got the Ohio State guys.
For you,
that's a lot of guys. Like, do they need to be in the spring portal window trying to get another corner? Or do you say, No, we need to focus on these 12 guys we've got.
Yeah, they have so many guys. And not just in those positions, but, I mean, what is this? 17? Gotten more than that. Jeez. 21 players in the secondary on scholarship, roughly?
Yes, and then you throw in Ryan Robinson, kind of preferred walk-ons. You're into the 22. Yeah. So if you're counting corner, safety, nickel, positions where you're putting five people on the field at one time, there are over 20 players that are in that group.
Yeah. And more than 20. Like, I feel great about the way that they – or not even great. I feel good about the way they've recruited over the past 2 years at in the secondary. That's fine. But when we're only looking in the scope of 2024 and specifically this spring in 2024, like – it comes back to transfers. J.K. Johnson, Zay Alexander, Jair Brown are the three that out of those three, you're going to have to get at least one really solid starter going into next year. And so will it be Zay? Will it be J.K.? Will it be Jair? I don't know. But then you fill the other spot with it could be one of the other guys, but it could be Ashton Stamps, Toviano. We don't know about Jeremiah Hughes at this point, like P.J. Woodland, all these guys. The cornerback room is still just – it's a mess, and it's going to take Corey Raymond, I think, a full cycle to figure it out and to figure out what he wants and who he wants and recruit at the level that he wants to recruit at. And the transfers that he does bring in, I think, next year will be a lot more established than what he's brought in this year to this point.
Yeah, I think, too, it's a point that I think will come to fruition with that is if Corey's taking transfers, they'll probably be established guys, because if not, his MO is recruiting high school guys and developing them. I mean, exactly. Greedy Williams, Dante Jackson, Christian Fulton, a ton of his corners over the years, Stingley, obviously, but he's pretty polished, played immediately. I mean, they got, whether it was because they had to or because he wanted to get their feet wet, but it won't shock me if PJ Woodland gets out there for reps this year. It won't shock me if he puts Stamps out there and more spots. I think for me, Stamps is still my pick as that pure core, like that corner that's younger that could come through and really shine for him. But as I'll wrap up my corner thoughts with where I started it. I think I know what Zay is, and it's a good thing, and it's enough. So if they just need one of these two Ohio State guys and one of the two from Stamps and Toviano, and then I feel like I've got three corners. And if all of them are hitting, then great. You've got options, but they need at least three guys that you feel really good about. And that's just at corner. At nickel, and if you've got Sage there, or Toviano, or whomever, I'm okay with nickel. It's the corner spots that I'm talking about.
Yeah. It is such an interesting position here, because I could, you know, see five different guys starting week one at corner. Sage is what he is. I think at nickel, you know, we know the good, we know the bad potentially. I think he's just a solid player. Nothing super special there, but a, you know, fine starter. Safety is less chaotic.
I think we know for a here we go. I feel confident in saying who the two starters are, and I think some people are going to hear one of these names and be upset about it, and I'll let you defend or whatever you think, but they took Jordan Gilbert from A&M. Jordan Gilbert went to U High. He was a four-star. They offered him late. They should have taken him out of high school. Now he's back. When he was on the field for A&M, he was really, really good, and he was young. Then last year starts off, plays well, gets injured. He will be available for spring ball, Brian Kelly said. So that's a great thing. So, yes, he's coming off injury, but he was healthy in high school. He doesn't have some big, long history of it. He was banged up. He ends up sitting, making sure he can transfer. He gets his red shirt, all that. He's your Andre Sam replacement. Then people say, well, who's the Major Burns replacement? Well, Major Burns is back. Major Burns didn't go pro. He didn't hit the portal. He didn't do anything. He's a guy who's got probably, 25 starts by now, more than that. People are screaming that they don't want to see any more Major Burns. I'm just not in that camp. It reminds me of Greg Penn from a year ago, like before that, and Damone Clark before that. Like, give these guys a chance to be coached up by this new staff and then see where they're at. Because between Corey Raymond and Jake Olson and then Blake Baker, who can coach up the safeties, I feel like Major Burns can be put in spots where he was better than he was a year ago.
I don't think
you can't bench Major Burns, right? I guess you could, but for who? Who are you?
Okay, Major Burns was in position to make plays last year and did not make the plays. Okay. That was, it's going to take a, he's going to have to take a step forward that I'm not sure he can take this year. And so, but the better question to me is, and to get to your point of you can't bench him, do you have anybody that can feasibly replace him on this team? And I think there's only one potential name that I could throw there, and that is Jayvion Toviano. And we don't even know where the heck he's going to play this year. So that's what this spring is about, is, all right, Major, you are in at start, you're starting at safety, but we, as a, obviously the coaching staff, the new coaching staff here, have watched the film on every single game. We have graded out every game, and we know what you did not do well last year. Can you this spring, over the next 2 months, show us that you have improved in those areas? If not, we're going to have to start taking measures of seeing if Toviano can play safety, if Stamps can play safety, if Kylan Jackson's ready. Like, we're going to have to take those steps, because last year, I don't even think it was he was not put in position. I just think he didn't make the plays. I remember, I think it was A&M, where he's in position and slips, and I know it's slipping is out of his control, but like, you don't make the play. There's a lot of tackles where he didn't fill the gaps. It's like, he has to make strides forward. And if he is the same player as he was last year, that is not good enough to start at LSU. I don't care. Give me Toviano. Give me Kylan Jackson. I think you're right. It's like, he has to start. It's just kind of default. He is the starter, but he has to still show that he has more to his game, because last year was so rough for him.
It's an interesting spot to be in, because beyond Greg Penn has started 27 of the last 28 games for LSU. Beyond Greg Penn, no one on defense has more starts at LSU than Major Burns. He's got 24. I just Googled it.
Yep.
When you're at a position like DB, Matty B, and you're rebuilding it, and you've taken a transfer already that you're having to start in Jordan Gilbert, and you don't know who your corners are, it's tough for me to believe that they're going to take 24 starts off the field. I get that there was the low moments last year where he wasn't playing well, all this, but there has to be some sort of, like, this bridge that we're talking of, where he was at to where you want him to be. Can, how much of that can be coached into him, and how much of that can you look at in film and just know, man, I made mistakes here or there that I don't need to make, and maybe with some different coaching or Major putting more time into the film room, like, can you bridge that gap, or do you feel like, no, they need to go ahead and think about putting a guy like Toviano, Kylan Jackson, Sage Ryan, maybe, I don't know, but
yeah, Sage,
and Sage doesn't fit into this conversation in terms of how I'm trying to lay it out. Those other guys have no starting experience. Like, Sage does, but you're taking off 20-something starts to put on somebody with no starting experience, and I get it. If he gets beat out, he gets beat out. I'm just trying to say right now ahead of time to LSU fans, don't be shocked if Major's starting.
Yes, he's the incumbent. It's like, he's going to have to be beat out, and I'm not sure there's, like, I say that, and I'm not sure there's a better option on this team. Like, I'm not sure that there's a better option than Major Burns.
There could be. We just don't know what positions they play. And Kylan Jackson, we don't know what kind of strides he's made.
Exactly. I mean, Sage Ryan, Toviano, Kylan Jackson, Jordan Allen.
Jordan Allen. Is Jordan Allen a viable option now in year three? Because remember, Ryan Yates got a lot of reps early on last year.
Yeah.
Eventually, those reps went to Jordan Allen, and Ryan Yates kind of quit playing. And then Kylan Jackson got in on the very back end. We still like Kylan Jackson a lot. Jordan Allen fit into this conversation now? And I think maybe so.
Yeah. Gilbert is the better player. Gilbert is, to me, the starting is going to start at safety.
Yes.
Burns is the one where we're going to have to see. I think this spring, to keep us on track with this spring, I think this is where Burns is going to have to have a really solid spring, a really, really good spring, and establish himself. I mean, hey, you know, over the past 2 years, it was like Charles Turner at center. Who's going to beat him out? Who's going to take his spot? Charles Turner, what did he do? He got better. He locked down the spot, and Zalen Hurd had to transfer because of it. Like, people had to move around because Charles Turner's locked down the starting job for 2 years. Major Burns, I look at him the same way I looked at Charles Turner. You have to improve. You have to show your value on the field, and we'll see. We'll see.
Okay, that's a fair comparison. I'll take it. And he did. And Charles Turner buckled in and never got beat out.
Exactly.
We mentioned them, but behind Jordan and Major, you'd have Kylan Jackson and Jordan Allen. You've got Ryan Yates coming off a freshman year where he got his feet wet and played a good bit as a backup. You got Austin Osberry coming in as a transfer from Auburn. This summer, you'll get DeShawn McBride here. They signed Joel Rogers. He's already on campus. Or excuse me, DeShawn's already on campus. So we will get to see
Matthew DeShawn.
Yeah, we'll get to see DeShawn in spring and Joel Rogers at safety. We'll get to see in spring. I've heard that he's getting looks at nickel. But yes, the other safety would be Matthew Langlois, who has had like the Chris Hilton trajectory, but not reached the part where you're no longer injured. Like Chris was injured for the first couple of years and finally wasn't. Then you get to see exactly why he was ranked so highly. Matthew Langlois was a top 10 safety in the country coming out of Catholic Point P. I mean, he was a really good player, and he has been injured every single year he's been at LSU. So if he's healthy, can he do anything beyond special teams? We'll see. He's going to get a shot at it this spring. So safety room is got talent. I just don't know kind of what the starters are going to look like. And a lot of the talent is young. So
yeah, this feels like it feels in the secondary. It feels like it's a group that's just like a year away.
Yeah. Right? It's a younger group. Yes.
Yeah. It's a young group. It's a young group, and they're continuing to recruit and like just figure it out this year. And then next year I'll feel really, really good about the group. But yeah, there's the secondary. That was
fun. All right. That wraps up defense. Let's get out of here on this. Let's get out of here on this, Maddie B. Your favorite, who's going to have the best year on defense, not named Harold Perkins?
Braden Swenson.
I like that pick.
I know. I
should have gone first.
Yeah, I was going to say, I probably took your pick there, but Braden Swenson, I just think him and Womack, if they can get those two on the field together, that's a really, really, really good edge tandem. So I'm not even sure who else you could pick here, honestly.
Oh, man. Well, I went Savion last year.
Greg Pitt should have another high. Like,
Greg Penn's always going to – I can pick Greg Penn because he's going to eat up stats for me. Yeah. He's going to get 10 tackles a game.
Exactly. He's going to have 100 tackles this year probably. So.
Yeah, I like Weeks and Penn. I'm trying to be a little bold here, so I'm looking at our depth chart. I'll pick someone who is not currently starting. Give me Parrish Shand for a big year.
Yeah.
D-end, playing with Savion Jones.
Any special teams?
Or Womack. Just give me Womack. Screw it. Give me Womack.
There you go.
I'll take it. Year two.
Any special teams thoughts?
Yeah, I didn't know if you wanted to do that on a different pod or what.
No, we can just throw it in here.
Run it through real quick. Well, much remains the same. Damian Ramos is your kicker. He was very solid for him a year ago, and he continues to get better. Slade Roy will be your long snapper. Came in from East Carolina a couple years ago. He's been perfect. No bad snaps. Dibert will continue to kick off and battle for that kicking or the starting kicker position. They signed the number 2 kicker in the country in Aaron Burrell. You can bring him in. And obviously with Ramos and Dibert here, he can kind of take his time and get adjusted. But you do have the newcomer. Peyton Todd is a former number 1 punter coming out of West Monroe. Thoughts? I don't know. We'll see. He had a huge guy. Okay. He played defense in high school too. He's knocking people's heads off. But big kid, big leg, and now he's had 2 years to sit behind Bramplett and get ready. I know he battled a little bit of an injury, but we'll finally see Peyton Todd. But what everybody is excited about is Matty B. They went to the portal and they got a proven kick returner, or I should say punt returner. They got a proven punt returner. Greg Clayton, you are off the clock. Thank you for your duties.
Thank you.
My man stepped up in a major way bailed them out at the punt position the past 2 years. This past year, they had the number 1 offense in college football. So they said, Greg Clayton, just fair catch it every time. Don't drop it. He can do that for you. No problem at all. He did it. But now it feels like a year ago when they got Aaron Anderson, we talked this up and we talked it up and we talked it up. And they gave him a shot and he fumbled it and they didn't get back in. But we were really talking about what he did in high school. And look, often that does carry over. With Xavion Thomas, we're talking what he's done at Mississippi State for 2 years, where he's been a top 5 punt returner in the country. I mean, and certainly one of the best in the SEC. So not only does he have college experience, he has SEC punt return experience and kickoff experience for 2 full seasons. So this is now I'm finally able to say it. I think they will put him out there, and no matter if he drops it or doesn't, he's staying out there.
Yeah, I can't wait to go to spring practice and just watch the punt returns and have the past 2 years wash away as I watch Xavion Thomas return or cleanly catch.
That's like the most exciting thing. This guy can actually catch the ball and then can do something with it. He's very dynamic.
Catch and run with the ball. I'm not sure we've ever seen something like that in the past 3 years.
But so, think about it. The last year's offense didn't need that. It was really in their best interest just to give it to Jaden. Like, this is not going to be the number one offense in college football. Yeah. Whatever extra 10 yards, 12 yards, 15 yards you can get on punts is massive.
I was about to say, imagine last year's offense, you give him another 8 yards of field position every time. I mean, it makes a difference. It does. It makes a tangible difference if you can get an extra 5 to 8 yards on field position every game. I mean, Xavien Thomas, I'm Peyton Todd. I mean, I'm kind of interested in, just because Bramlett kind of tailed off towards the end of last year. The punts were really shaky. So if you can get back to getting Peyton Todd, like you said, they're going to have to punt more. They're going to have to kick more field goals, probably. They're going to have to just be better on punt return.
Actually return the punts, yeah.
Yeah, I think special teams, we haven't realized it yet, or at least I haven't, but you're going to have to be better on special teams than you were the last 2 years, because if your offense isn't number one in the country, then it's going to start to take a bigger emphasis like it did 2 years ago. So
Slade Nagel, the tight ends coach coming out of Tulane, has got a history coaching special teams. He will take over special teams, and obviously we'll have some assistance from others. And then quickly on kickoffs, which half the time they don't even take it out of the end zone. But if they do, Xavien Thomas housed one last year against A&M for Mississippi State. He certainly can play kickoffs as well. We saw them play Caleb Jackson there as the guy last year as a true freshman. If he's your starting running back and like you don't want him there for some reason, I could see them putting Caden Durham there. They trusted a true freshman running back a year ago there. He's got speed for days, and one of those that if you're running 10 fives, 10 sixes at 215, put him back there on kicks. And if they're kicking away from Xavien, then let him get a 15-yard head start before anyone's on him. I think he could be an interesting play there. But that about wraps it up there. Really, I guess we're expressing real confidence in Xavien Thomas because we've seen him do it for 2 years at State. So on special teams, I feel the only unknown will be Peyton Todd.
If we're wrong about Xavien Thomas,
then they'll never find a punt returner ever.
We give up. We give up. It's over.
If he can't catch the punts, then
don't even field the punt returner. Just go 11 straight to block the punt every time. That's it. That's all you need to do. All right. That's it. Thank you all for joining us for another spring preview podcast. Like I said, you can check out the football one on the channel already. We'll have daily coverage of spring ball as it unfolds next week and for the next basically month and a half. So stay tuned to the Bengal Tiger on 3. If you haven't already subscribed, $1 for a month to the Bengal Tiger. That gets you basically through spring ball. So check that out if you haven't already. If you're already a subscriber, thank you. We'll do a mailbag fairly soon and get all of y'all's questions in for that. But yeah, Shay.
And then they practice next week on Tuesday. We won't be there that day. The media won't be. Thursday we will be, or it's like Thursday, Friday. I can't remember, but we get to see them one time next week. Then they go on spring break. Then they don't come back till like the 18th, 19th. And the first practice we'll see is around the 20th, 21st. So a bit of a split up here. Obviously, they get it going. They get through that acclimation period. It's more than that. It's not just acclimation. I think it's acclimatization, right?
I don't think it's acclimatization.
What was acclimation? That's right. Yeah.
Acclimatize. I hate when you see a word and now I don't know what the word is. Acclimation. That's what I'm saying. An acclimation period.
Yeah.
I'm right.
I think they're similar. One has to do as well.
Jay does not admit that he's wrong.
The environment you're in, and maybe if it's very hot, you need to get adjusted to the heat before you're allowed to put on full pads. I don't know. We can get a full answer out of that. Maybe
acclimatize.
You went to college more recently than I did, so you should be getting.
I only went for 3.5 years, so I can't.
That's usually a good thing. Would you flunk out?
No, I got all the credits in 3.5 years.
Yeah, I went for 4.5 years. So then you've done better than me.
I already said acclimation period, or you said acclimatization period, which I don't know if that's wrong. Look, Googling it, I don't think it's wrong, but I just haven't really heard it. So
I don't know. Now you're gonna, we need someone from, someone in the YouTube or the board, just chime in, and
the board will let us know. They will let us in about an hour and 5 minutes when this is uploaded. They will let us know.
Oh, here we go. You ready? From the NCAA's official website. During the third and fourth days of the acclimatization period with a Z, helmets and shoulder pads shall be the only piece of protective equipment, blah, blah, blah. I think that's a dub for me.
Acclimatization? All right. Shay got it.
We learned something new today. I didn't. I already knew that, but Matthew did.
No, you knew it. Well, I think
you would have stayed in college 4 years and not 3.5. Maybe you would have known.
Because he couldn't pronounce it, so I was like, all right, he does. I was trying to help him out, and then all of a sudden,
I don't need any help, I got it. Google, okay. NCAA, found it.
Acclimatization period.
Yeah, point being, all right, they're gonna practice for a few days without any pads on. They're gonna go on spring break, they're gonna come back and have pads.
I think we were pronouncing it, it's acclimatization.
Okay,
it's not acclimatization.
Oh well.
All right. Well, there you go.
I'll work on it. I'll work on my pronunciations over the weekend before camp.
We'll get it. But yeah, thank you all for joining us. Leave us a like, comment, share, subscribe to the YouTube if you haven't already. Thank you all for y'all's support on the videos. We will start to really rev back up here in March. February was kind of like just a dead period in a sense with football. So we're back on it now.
Shout out Bengal Tiger, all of our members. Shout out one of our members, Cordell Music, for the sweatshirt.
Oh, yes.
Big shout out.
Shout out, Cordell.
But all right, that's all I got.
There you go. Thanks for joining us. We will talk to y'all later.